stopped and peered into the gloom. At first, I couldn't see anything. But then, my eyes fell on a huge, shadowy thing standing right in front of the chicken house door. Drover hadn't exaggerated. It was a horned monster, all right, and he was fixing to bust down the door and start killing chickens. I didn't have a moment to waste. It was now or never, him or me, glory or death. I bared my fangs and attacked. First contact was made only a matter of seconds after I launched the attack. The monster must have heard me coming, because he kicked the tar out of me and sent me rolling. I leaped up and charged him again, but this time I made it through, sank my teeth into him, and gave him a ferocious bite. He slung me around, but I hung on. He was big, all right, big as a house. I figured he stood, 14 feet tall at the shoulder, had three eyes, a long forked tongue, and a tail with deadly stingers on the end of it. Also, horns that glowed in the dark, and tusks. Did I mention that? Big, long tusks growing out of the side of his mouth, the kind that could rip a dog to shreds. Green slobber dripped out of his mouth, and his eyes were red. It was a fight to the death. Come on, Drover! Attack! I set up a howl to alert the house. I would need all the help I could get. I'll give Drover credit. He came tearing out of the weeds, yapping at the top of his lungs, and got within 3 feet of the monster before he veered off and headed for the machine shed. The lights came on down at the house. The door slammed, and I heard Loper running towards me. I hoped he had the gun. I was getting beat up and tired. I wasn't sure I could keep up the fight much longer. The gun exploded, lit up the night. The monster ran, and I started after him, ready to give him the coup de grace, as we say, but Loper called me back. I figured he didn't want to risk losing the head of ranch security, which seemed pretty sensible to me. So I went back to him, limping on all four legs at once because they all hurt, and so did everything else. Wagging my tail, I went up to him, ready for my reward. I didn't get a reward. To make a long story short, Drover had sent me into battle against the milk cow, and I got cursed for it. I thought very seriously about terminating Drover. I mean his life, not his job. But I couldn't find him in the machine shed, so I dragged my battered carcass down to the gas tanks and curled up on my gunny sack bed. I could have sworn that was a monster. I slept late the next morning. To be real honest about it, I didn't wake up till sometime in the early afternoon. Guess all that monster fighting kind of wore me down. What woke me up was the sound of the flatbed pickup rattling up to the gas tank, right in front of my bedroom. Loper got out and started filling the pickup. He looked at me, gave his head a shake, and said something under his breath. I tried to read his lips, but couldn't make out what he said. Probably wasn't the Pledge of Allegiance. Slim went around to the front of the pickup and opened up the hood. I was just getting up, right in the middle of a nice big stretch, when I heard him say, "Hank, come here, boy." Gee, at last a friendly voice. How long had it been since someone had spoken to me in a kind voice? In my job, nobody ever says a word when you do something right. Only when you make a mistake, and then you hear plenty about it. I trotted around the front of the pickup, limped, actually, because I was pretty stove up from the battle. Wagged my tail and said howdy. Slim bent down and rubbed me behind the ears. Good dog. Good dog? I just melted on those words, rolled over on my back, and kicked all four legs in the air. It's amazing what a few kind words and a smile can do for a dog, even as hard-boiled as I am, which is something you have to be in my line of work. I respond to kindness. Slim rubbed me in that special place at the bottom of my ribs, the one that's somehow hooked up to my back leg. I've never understood the mechanics of it, but if a guy scratches me there, it makes my back leg start kicking. Slim scratched and I kicked. Felt good and made old Slim laugh. Then he told me to sit. I sat and tried to shake hands. Shaking hands is one of the many tricks I've learned over the years, and I can usually count on it to delight an audience of people. But Slim didn't notice. He reached under the hood, pulled out the dipstick, and wiped it off on my ear. Good dog. And that was it. I waited around for some more scratching or handshaking, but he seemed to forget that I was there. He slammed the hood and stepped on my paw. Oops. Sorry, Hank. Get out of the way. The sweet moments in this life are fleeting. You have to enjoy them to the fullest when they come, before some noodle steps on you and tells you to get out of the way. Slim and Loper got into the pickup, and Loper said, "Don't you dogs try to follow us." He gunned the motor and pulled away from the gas tank. Drover suddenly appeared out of nowhere and hopped up into the back of the pickup. "Come on, Hank, we're supposed to go." In the back of my mind, I knew that wasn't right, but I didn't have time to think about it. I chased the pickup until it slowed down for the big hill in front of the house and jumped up in the back. "Where are we going?" Drover gave me that famous empty-headed look of his. The one where you can gaze into his eyes and see all the way to the end of his tail, and there's nothing in between.
"Beats me, but I bet we're going somewhere."
Loper drove up to the mailbox and turned left. If he'd turned right, it would have meant that we were going to the pasture. A left turn meant only one thing. We were going to town. And that meant only one thing. Loper was going to be mad as thunder when he found out we'd jumped in the back and hitched a ride. But what the heck? You can't be safe and cautious all the time. If you're too timid in this life, you'll miss out on all the fun and adventure. You'll just stay home and snap at the flies. And when you get to be an old dog, you'll look back on your life and think,
"All these years I've been on this earth, and all I ever done was snap at the flies."
And you'll regret that when the opportunity came up, you didn't sneak a ride into town. Drover curled up behind the cab and watched the scenery go by. I sat on my haunches, closed my eyes, and just let the wind flap my ears around. Felt good, restful. There for a little while, I forgot all my cares and responsibilities. That lasted until we got to the highway. Loper pulled under the blacktop and started picking up speed. The wind began to sting, and my ears flapped a little harder than I like them to flap, and the crumbs of alfalfa hay on the pickup bed started to swirl. I laid down beside Drover. "Say, before I forget, I want to thank you for all the help you gave me last night with that monster." He gave me a shy grin.
"Oh, that's okay. It was the least I could do."
It sure as heck was. If you'd done any leaster, you'd have been fighting for the other side. The shy grin disappeared.
"You mad about something?"
"Forget it." I didn't want to talk. Alfalfa leaves were getting into my mouth. I slept all the way to town. Next thing I knew, we had slowed down and were coasting down Main Street. I sat up and took in the sights. Bunch of stores and street lights. Several stop signs, couple of town dogs loafing around, and a big tumbleweed rolling down the middle of the street. Loper drove into a parking place in front of the Waterhole Cafe, beside two or three other pickups that looked like cowboy rigs. When he got out and saw us back there, he gave us the tongue lashing I had expected. It was no worse than usual, not bad enough to make me regret that we'd hitched a ride to town. He told us to sit, be good, and don't bark. And then he and Slim went into the water hole. For 5 or 10 minutes, we concentrated on being good, which was a real drag. Then I heard Drover say, "Psst." He jerked his head towards a pickup that was parked next to us. In the back end, fast asleep, was a big, ugly boxer dog. We both moved to the side of the pickup bed and stared at him. He must have felt our eyes because after a bit his head came up and he glowered at us with a wicked expression on his face.
What are you staring at?
Just looking at the sights. What's your name?
Puddin'-tane. Ask me again and I'll tell you the same.
I guess Drover didn't understand what that meant because he said, What's your name?
John Brown. Ask me again and I'll knock you down.
Drover gave me a puzzled look and I said, How come they've got you chained up? He was tied to the headache racks of the pickup with a piece of chain.
So I won't kill any dogs.
You kill dogs? No fooling?
Just for drill. I prefer the bigger stuff.
That sort of ended the conversation. Puddin'-tane went back to sleep, and I got involved with a couple of noisy flies that were bothering my ears. Took a few snaps at them, but didn't get anything. Next thing I knew, Drover said,
What would you do if we peed on your tires?
A boxer's head came up real slow, and he turned them wicked eyes on little Drover.
What did you say?
I said, What would you do if we peed on your tires?
Drover! It made me a little uneasy, the way he was talking about we. The boxer sat up.
I'd tear off your legs and wring your neck.
But how could you do that when you're chained up?
Drover! The boxer lifted one side of his mouth and unveiled a set of long white teeth.
I'd bust the chain.
It looks pretty stout to me.
Drover!
It ain't stout enough.
Just curious.
Big and Ugly went back to sleep, and I got back to them flies. One of them was big and green, and also a little slow on the draw. I waited for my shot, and snap! Got the little booger. Then I had to spit him out real quick. Boy, did he taste foul. Seemed to me I heard water running somewhere. I glanced around and saw Big and Ugly's head come up. He'd heard it too. Drover had just wiped out the left rear tire and was going towards the front one. Seemed to me this was poor judgment on Drover's part. The boxer sprang to his feet.
Get away from that tire, runt. No two-bit cow dog's gonna mess up my tires.
I didn't like his tone of voice. I got up and wandered to the side of the pickup. Say there, partner, maybe I didn't hear you right. You weren't suggesting that there's any two-bit cow dogs around here, were you?
I ain't suggesting, buddy. I'm saying you're a couple of two-bit cow dogs.
Do you mean that as an insult or a compliment?
Cow dog don't mean but one thing to me. Sorry and two-bit.
Oh, dear, Drover. The dust seems kind of bad all of a sudden. Why don't you wet down that other tire? He grinned, hiked up his leg, and let her rip. The boxer went nuts when he saw that. All at once, his fangs were flashing in the sunlight. He lunged against the chain and started barking. Big, deep roar of a bark, so loud you could feel it bouncing off your face. I waited for him to shut up. You want to take back what you said about cow dogs? He lunged against the chain and slashed the air about 6 inches from the end of my nose. I guess not. I hopped down, skipped around to the right side of the boxer's pickup, and wiped out the front and back tires. Drover and I met at the front, swapped sides, and gave each tire a second coat. Big and Ugly went berserk. He fought against the chain and roared,
Let me at him. I'll kill him. Just let me at him.
Drover and I finished the job and hopped back into the pickup bed. When the cafe door burst open, we were fast asleep. Slim, Loper, and the boxer's master stormed out. What's going on out here, you dogs? It's my dog, Loper. He's making all the racket. Bruno, shut up. You're disturbing the whole town.
I sat up and
opened my eyes. Bruno was getting a good scolding from his master. He whined and wagged his stump tail and tried to explain what had happened. But his master didn't understand. This seems to be a common trait in masters. Now you lie down and be quiet. I don't want to hear another peep out of you. You know better than that. The men went back inside. I waited a minute and then gave Drover the coast is clear sign. We got up and went over to the edge of the pickup. Bruno was lying flat, with his eyes wide open and a couple of fangs showing beneath his lips. He was trembling with rage. Drover, you ever seen an uglier dog than that one?
No, I never did.
Me neither. Can you imagine what his mother must have looked like? A growl came from deep in Bruno's throat.
I don't like his pointed ears.
You know why they're pointed, don't you? When boxers are born, they have such big floppy ears that a surgeon has to cut off 2 yards of hide. And then they whack off the tail, and then they put the pup's face into a shop vise and mash it till it looks just like Bruno's.
No kidding?
Yep. And as you might expect, it affects the brain, too. Mashes it down to the size of a dog biscuit. The growl in Bruno's throat was growing louder. That's why boxers are so dumb. Brain's been smallered. It's a mark of the breed. They tell me you can't get papers on a boxer unless he's too dumb to walk across the street. They give him a test, see, and all the ones that flunk become registered boxers. By this time, the growl had become a steady roar. And that's why you never see boxers working cattle, just too frazzling dumb to hold down a steady job. Bruno's eyes were cloudy, as if they were filled with smoke from a fire burning inside. His teeth were snapping together. Maybe he was crushing imaginary bones.
Why would anybody want a dog that was so big and dumb and ugly?
I've wondered about that myself, and the only answer I can come up with is that maybe if a guy had a piece of log chain that he didn't know what to do with, he'd buy a boxer to hang it on. That did it. Bruno erupted again and lunged at us, his mouth wide open and full of jagged teeth. I got a real good look at his tonsils, which appeared to be a little inflamed. I jerked my head at Drover, and we were both sending up a line of Z's when the cowboys came out again. Bruno, what in the world? Bad dog, why can't you just lie still and shut up like these other dogs? Bruno whimpered. Well, I guess I'd better go. Bruno's on a snort. See y'all later. When the pickup drove off, me and Drover sat up and grinned and waved goodbye to our new friend. Bruno was so mad, his eyes were crossed and foam dripped off his chops. That's what makes being a cow dog worthwhile. Teamwork. When we crossed the cattle guard that put us back on the ranch, I felt a change come over me. In town, I'd been just another happy-go-lucky dog without a care in the world. But back on the ranch, I felt that same crushing sense of responsibility that's known to people in high places, such as presidents, prime ministers, emperors, and such. Being head of ranch security is a great honor, but also a dreadful burden. I remembered the chicken house murder. I still didn't have any suspects. Or I had too many suspects. Maybe that was it. Everyone was a suspect. Well, everyone but the milk cow, and I had pretty much scratched her off the list. And the porcupine, since they only eat trees. But every other creature on the ranch was under the shadow of suspicion. Except Drover. He was too chicken to kill a chicken. When we got home, I trotted up to the chicken house and went over the whole thing in my mind. While I was sitting there, lost in thought, a chicken came up and pecked me on the tail. scared the fool out of me just for a second. I snarled at her and made her squawk and flap her wings. That's another thing about this job. Every day, every night, you put your life on the line. And for what? A bunch of idiot birds that would just as soon peck you on the tail as tell you good morning. Sometimes you wonder if it's worth it, and all that keeps you going is dedication to duty. In the end, that's what separates the top echelon of cow dogs from the common rubble. Rabble, whatever the word is. Anyway, the dogs that don't give a rip is what I'm saying. Well, I had nothing to work with. No evidence, no case. There wasn't a thing I could do until the killer struck again. I could only hope that me and Drover could catch him in the act. I decided to change my strategy. Instead of throwing a guard around the chicken house, we would use the stakeout approach. Stakeout is a technical term which we use in this business. Webster defines stake as a length of wood or metal pointed at one end for driving into the ground. It comes from the Anglo-Saxon word staka, akin to the Danish stak. Out is defined as away from, forth from, or removed from a place, position, or situation. It comes from the Middle English ut. That's about as technical as I can make it. In layman's terms, a stakeout is basically a trap. You leave the chicken house unguarded, don't you see, and watch and wait and wait and watch until the villain makes his move. And then you swoop in and get him. It's pretty simple, really, when you get used to the terminology. At dark, me and Drover staked the place out. We hid in some tall weeds, maybe 30 feet from the chicken house. Time sure did drag. The first couple hours, we heard coyotes howling off in the distance. Drover kept looking around with big eyes. I thought he might try to slip off to the machine shed, but he didn't. After a while, he laid his head down on his paws and went to sleep. I could have kept him awake. I mean, pulled rank and demanded that he stay awake. But I thought, what the heck, the little guy probably needed the sleep. I figured I could keep watch and wake him up when the time came for action. Then I fell asleep. But the funny thing about it was that I dreamed I was awake, sitting there and standing guard. I kept saying, "Hank, are you awake?" And Hank said, "Sure I am. If I was asleep, you and I wouldn't be talking like this, would we?" And I said, "No, I suppose not." Seems to me it's kind of a waste of good sleep to dream about what you were doing when you were awake. But that's what happened. I heard something squawk, and I said, "Hank, what's that?" "Nothing." "You sure?" "Sure, I'm sure. You're wide awake and watching the stakeout, aren't you?" "I think so, yes." "Then stop worrying." The squawking went on, and the next thing I knew, Drover was jumping up and down.
"Hank! Oh, Hank! He's back! Murder! Help! Blood! We fell asleep! Oh, my gosh! Hank, wake up!"
"Huh? I ain't asleep." And right then my eyes popped open, and I woke up. Dang the luck, I was asleep. I was afraid of that. We dashed out of the weeds and found a body south of the chicken house door. The M.O. was the same. There's another technical term, M.O. It stands for modus of operationis, which means how it was done. We shorten it to M.O. A pattern began to emerge. The killer had struck twice, and both times he had killed a white leghorn hen. Actually, that might not have been a crucial point because there weren't any other colored hens on the place, but I mention it to demonstrate the kind of deep thinking that goes into solving a case of this type. You can't overlook a single detail, even those that don't mean anything. But the most revealing clue was that the murderer hadn't dragged his victim off. That meant that he hadn't killed for food, but only for the sport of it. In other words, we had a pathagorical killer on the loose. This was very significant, the first big break in the case. At last, I had an M.O. that narrowed the suspects down to coyotes, coons, skunks, badgers, foxes, rats. It hadn't eliminated anybody, and I was right back where I started. I hunkered down and studied the body. It was still warm. Warm chicken. My mouth began to water, and I noticed a rumble in my stomach. This fresh evidence was pointing the case in an entirely new direction. Drover, why don't you run on and get some sleep? You've had a tough day.
Oh, I'm awake now.
You look sleepy.
I do.
Yes, you do. Awful sleepy. Your eyes seem kind of baggy.
Don't you think we should sound the alarm?
Not just yet. I need to do a little more study on the corpse. My stomach growled real loud. Drover perked his ears.
What was that?
I didn't hear anything. He waited and listened. I concentrated on making my stomach shut up. You can do that, you know, control your body with your mind. Only it didn't work this time. My stomach growled again, sounded like a rusty gate hinge.
What is that?
Rigor mortis. Chickens do that. Run along now and get some sleep. We've got a big day ahead of us.
Well, okay.
He started off and heard my stomach again. He turned around and twisted his head and stared at me.
Was that you?
Don't be absurd. Good night, Drover. He shrugged and went on down to the gas tanks. I gave him plenty of time to bed down, get comfortable, snap at a few mosquitoes, and fall asleep. My mouth was watering so much that it was dripping off my chin. When everything was real quiet, I snatched up the body, loped out into the horse pasture, and began my post-mortem investigation. It was very interesting. I didn't hurry this part of the investigation. I labored over my work for several hours and fell into a peaceful sleep. When I awoke, it was bright daylight. I could feel the rays of the sun warming my coat. I glanced around, trying to remember where I was, and when I figured it out, my heart almost stopped beating. I was lying in the center of a circle of white feathers, and several more feathers were clinging to my mouth and nose. My belly bulged, and Sally Mae was standing over me, a look of horror on her face.
Hank, you're the one! Oh, Hank, how could you?
Huh? No, wait, there had been a mistake. I'd only... Well, you see, I just... The chicken was already dead, and I thought... Hey, listen, I could explain everything. It must have looked pretty bad, me lying there in the midst of all that damaging evidence. Sally Mae headed down to the house, swinging her arms and walking fast. I didn't know what to do. If I ran, it would look bad. If I stayed, it would look bad. No matter what I did, it would look bad. Maybe eating the darn chicken had been a mistake. I was still sitting there, mulling over my next course of action, when Sally Mae returned with her husband.
There, look! You see who's been killing the chickens? Your dog!
I whapped my tail against the ground and put on my most innocent face. Loper and I had been through a lot together. Surely he would know that his head of ranch security wasn't a common chicken-killing dog. He had to trust me. But I could see his face harden, and I knew I was cooked. Hank, you bad dog! I never would have thought you'd do something like this. I didn't. It was a mistake. I'd been framed. Come here, Hank. I crawled over to him. He picked up the chicken head, which was lying on the ground. I hadn't eaten it because I found that beaks are hard to swallow. He tied a piece of string around the head and tied it around my neck. There, you wear that chicken head until it falls off. Maybe that'll help you remember that killing hens doesn't pay around here. They left, talking in low voices and shaking their heads. I tried to bite the string and get that thing off my neck, but I couldn't do it. I was feeling mighty low, mighty blue. I was ashamed of myself, but also outraged at the injustice of it. I headed down to the corral to find Drover. Instead, I ran into Pete the Barn Cat, just the guy I didn't want to see. He was sunning himself in front of the saddle shed. In other words, loafing, which is what he does about 95% of the time. The mice were rampant down at the feed barn, but Pete couldn't work a mouse patrol into his busy schedule. It interfered with his loafing. That's a cat for you. He saw me before I saw him. He yawned, and a big grin spread across his mouth.
Nice necklace you've got on, Hanky. Where could a fellow buy one of those?
You have to be in the mood for Pete, and I wasn't. I made a dive for him, and he escaped instant death by a matter of inches. He hissed and ran, and I fell in right behind him. I chased him around the corrals. He hissed and I barked. There were several horses in the west lot, and they all started bucking and kicking up their heels. It was my lousy luck that Slim happened to be riding one of them. 2-year-old colt, as I recall, and he started yelling, "Hank, get out of here! Whoa, Sinbad! Easy, Bronc!" Nobody around here ever yells at the cat. Why? I don't know. I just don't understand. I gave up the chase. I would settle accounts with Pete some other day. I loped over to the gas tanks, looking for Grover. He heard me coming, sat up, saw the chicken head around my neck, turned tail, and sprinted for the machine shed as fast as he could go. "Grover, wait, it's me, Hank!" He kept going. I guess he didn't want to get involved with a criminal. I went down to the gas tank and laid down. Boy, I felt low. I tried to sleep, but didn't have much luck. That chicken head was starting to smell, and it reminded me all over again.